or quickly perceived by the sensitive rods in your peripheral vision. So a faintly visible light, like a phosphorescent screen, can appear to become slightly brighter when viewed indirectly. The tragedy of Blanlot is that he had seen the phosphorescent screens brighten out of the corners of his eyes. But he wasn't really seeing a change. The excess light existed in a ghostly electrical impulse along his own optic nerve. And so, in a sense, his critics were right all along. It really was all in his head.
Andrew Sachs was reading Bambard's Folly by Paul Collins. The producer was Jane Ray. Tomorrow we'll hear about the clever dullard. William Henry Ireland was written off by his father as a muddle-headed dunce, but Ireland had one remarkable secret skill which made him the toast of London society and quite literally got him into his father's good books. He could write Shakespeare. And our reader Andrew Sachs appears again tonight on 4 Extra as the faithful Watson in The Return of Sherlock Holmes, the saviour of Cripplegate Square at 9:15.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 3 o'clock. Hello, this is Susan Ray with part two of our Edith Wharton drama for this hour, The Custom of the Country, telling the story of Undine Spragg, a Midwestern girl who attempts to ascend in New York City society. Tonight, the return of Sherlock Holmes. This week, the great fiddler and drug addict recalls a case from his past when the guidance of an extraordinary man helped solve a particularly diabolic crime. At 9:15. Now we continue Edith Wharton's 1913 satire about marriage and money in early 20th century American society, with the protagonist rejoicing in the name of Undine Spragg. Today, leaving her husband and child in New York, Undine travels to Paris, where she meets a charming French aristocrat. If there are any charming French aristocrats listening to this, please send me a coded message in the Times and we can arrange a rendezvous. You see, I even speak French.
Here in New York, young Undine Marvell was fretting at the shortcomings in her marriage and championed to get away to the bright lights of Paris. In particular, she was thinking of Mr. Peter Van Degen and how she might convince him to leave his wife. So surely it were providence when the doctor pronounced that the sole cure for her nerves would be to take a trip across the pond. A few days before her departure, she and her youngster ran into Elmer Moffat, the very man who'd fix things so her husband could pay for it.
Good morning, Mrs. Marvell.
Elmer!
This is the heir apparent. Happy to make your acquaintance, young sir.
He's been spending the afternoon with his grandfather. They played so hard, he's sleepy.
He's a mighty fine fellow. But isn't he rather an armful for you?
Oh, we haven't far to go. We'll pick up a cab at the corner.
Well, let me carry him that far, anyhow.
Go to Mr. Moffat, yeah, Polly. He'll carry you better than Mother.
I wonder if he knows what a friend I've been to him lately.
He shall be told as soon as he's old enough to thank you. I'm so glad you came to Ralph about that business.
I gave him a leg up, and I guess he's given me one, too.
It's been awfully nice of you to do what you've done. Right along.
You know, I'll be glad to call around and see you once in a while.
Of course, I'll always be pleased to see you. Only, as it happens, I'm just sailing for Europe.
I thought you said the other evening you expect to stay on in town until July.
Yes, but that's all changed. Ralph and the boy are going to move into his mother's house, and we shall let out our house for a few months. I sail on Saturday to join some friends in Paris, and later I may do some motoring in Switzerland.
I see. Everything's changed, as you say. And your husband can blow you off to the trip. Well, I hope you have a first-class time.
If I do, you know, I shall owe it all to you.
While Undine Marvell was repairing her health in Paris, Ralph spent his days working hard in the heat of the city. Undie wrote him when she had time, but her social life kept her pretty busy. So when he brung the boy over on a weekend to visit Undie's ma and pa, I was glad to keep him up to date.
Polly, come and see what Grandma has for you.
Oh, Mr. Sprack, he's just had his lunch.
Oh, he's only having a little hunt for a surprise in Grandma's pockets.
You're pale, Ralph. They working you too hard in that office?
Oh, just look at that boy. I declare, if he ain't in just as much of a hurry for everything as his mother.
Well, he won't come to no harm from peanut candy, that's for sure, Mrs. Heaney. So you don't need to scold the child. Here, Polly, sit on Grandma's knee.
Well, I guess if he was a mite older, he'd be better pleased with this and with the candy. It's the very clipping I was trying to find for you the other day, Mrs. Sprague.
Shh, listen now. It's about your mama.
With Pete Van Dagen to set the pace, it's no wonder the New York set in Paris has struck a livelier gait than ever this spring. It's a high-pressure season, and no one lags behind less than the fascinating Mrs. Ralph Marvell, who is to be seen daily and nightly in all the smartest restaurants and naughtiest theaters, with so many devoted swains in attendance that the rival beauties of both worlds are said to be making catty comments. But then Mrs. Marvell's gowns are almost as good as her looks, and how can you expect other women to stand for such a monopoly?
I dare say she's getting along just fine. You heard from Andy, Ralph?
No, not by this post. I begin to think I must have lost a letter.
Real estate prices still rising in the Bronx, are they?
I think so, Mr. Sprague, though it's the senior partners who handle the more profitable sales. Paul, that's enough. Let's wrap it up for later now.
Why, the child hasn't et more than half yet. Let him at it a while longer. We ain't hardly seen the boy smile yet, have we, Mrs. Heaney?
My Clippins didn't have no news yet of Undine's latest beau. But since matters with Peter Van Dagen weren't moving along altogether fast enough for her liking, she got herself noticed by one of them fancy French aristocrats, Marquis Raymond de Chelles. He invited her to visit his chateau, chaperoned, of course, by her friend Mrs. Shallum. And Undy thought there might be nothing better for putting Peter Van Dagen on his mettle. Ralph, not hearing anything from her and feeling weary and lonesome, paid a call to his cousin, Claire Van Dagen.
I was afraid you might have left town for the summer.
Oh, the only place one can escape New Yorkers in early summer is New York. They're all gadding about Paris and London.
You have made it lovely and cool in here, Claire.
I keep the shades down, and then I like to sit beside the window and read.
Oh, how peaceful it is.
I hoped you'd come and see me, Ralph. How's Paul?
Oh, flourishing. His favorite game is to climb up on my shoulders and make me gallop like a horse. But I'm afraid I'm becoming rather a breathless old nag.
You look terrible.
A man doesn't know till he tries it how killing uncongenial work can be.
Well, how is your own writing coming along?
Oh, no time for that. But I daren't chuck my job. I'm in mortal terror of its chucking me. And we haven't enough money as it is.
Oh, I thought you'd paid Undine's trip in advance.
Oh, Undine. Well, I've had a disappointment with the house. You know I let it out to the Lipscombs, and they kept me waiting 2 months for the rent. And now they've moved out without paying a penny.
Oh, yes, I heard he'd been suspended from the stock exchange. And I see in the papers that his wife's retort has been to sue for a divorce.
Oh, really? Well, I seem to remember Undine suggesting she might. A long time ago, when my grandfather asked about the Lipscombs.
It's the custom in Apex. You know, sitting here alone, I've been thinking about this rising tide of divorces.
Oh, yes?
American husbands don't involve their wives in the real business of their lives.
The real business?
Their work. They don't rely on their wives' judgment in serious affairs. They don't...
Well, if I told Undine about my work, she'd be bored to death.
Yes, but why? And I agree. I mean, Peter doesn't tell me. If he did, there would be something we cared about together, something we shared. Women aren't interested in their husband's work because the men don't care enough about their wives to involve them in it.
Oh, I like that. We slave to earn money to keep our wives in style.
Yes, but the interest, not for you, maybe, but for the majority of men, is in the work. The passion for making money surpasses everything. And the houses and motors and jewels a man buys his wife are simply the bribe she's paid for keeping out of his way.
And Americans have a monopoly of this evil.
Yes. It's the custom of the country. Why do European women interest themselves so much more in what the men are doing? Because the men make their wives important, central to their decisions. American men are more in love with business than with their wives.
And this explains the Lipscombs.
Well, yes. She'll be looking for a richer man, because that's how she can show her own value.
And you? When you married Peter?
Oh, I know. I don't come out of my own theory very well.
Oh, I didn't mean... Oh. Oh!
Oh, but Ralph, you really are ill.
Oh, it's just a headache. I'm tired. I really must go.
Oh, Ralph!
Oh, it's like a corkscrew in the back of my skull.
Oh, wait, come, sit down.
Oh, no, it'll pass.
Paris, Tuesday, 6 p.m. Dear Ralph, I am well, hoping this finds you and the boy the same. I have not managed to eke out my allowance so cleverly this month as the last, and am writing to ask you... Peter!
Didn't I knock? Don't look so savage. They told me downstairs you'd got back, and I just bolted in without thinking.
What a ridiculous hour for a visit.
Well, if you disappear like that without a word...
I told my maid to telephone you I was going away.
You couldn't make time to do it yourself, I suppose?
We rushed off suddenly. I hardly had time to get to the station.
You rushed off where, may I ask?
I've been staying down at Raymond de Chelles' chateau in Burgundy. It's the most wonderful old house you ever saw. A real castle with towers and water all around it, and a funny kind of bridge they pull up. Raymond said he wanted me to see just how they live at home, and I did. I saw everything. The tapestries that Louis Cannes gave them, and the chapel where their own priest says mass.
You never told me you knew Chelles' mother.
I don't. She wasn't there. But it didn't make a bit of difference because Raymond brought down a cook from the Lux.
Was the cook got down to chaperone you?
You talk like Ralph. I had Bertha Shalom with me.
Bertha? You went without knowing his parents and without their inviting you. Don't you know what that sort of thing means in France? Chelles wants to compromise you. That's his game.
Do you suppose he does? I'm so unconventional. When I like a man, I never stop to think about such things. But at any rate, he's not married.
What difference does that make?
It might make a good deal. I see how careful I ought to be about going round with you.
With me? That's another thing. You can always trust me to look after you.
With your reputation? Much obliged.
I'm as good as gold. You've made a new man of me.
Have I? I wonder what you've done to me but make a discontented woman of me. Discontented with everything I had before I knew you.
Look here. Where are we going to dine tonight?
Tonight? I can't. I'm engaged.
I suppose you're dining with Chelles, is that it?
You know I'm not married to you. Yet.
Can't you see the man's doing his best to make a fool of you?
Oh, what does it matter what I do or don't do, and Ralph has ordered me home next week?
Well, you're not going, are you?
I'm a poor man's wife. I can't do the things my friends do. It's not because Ralph loves me that he wants me back. It's simply because he can't afford to let me stay.
But you mustn't go. It's preposterous. Why should a woman like you be sacrificed when a lot of dreary fronts have everything they want? Besides, you can't chuck me like this. We're all motoring down to Italy next week.
Oh, Italy.
You'd love that, wouldn't you? And then in August, there's Treville, and the motoring's ripping in Normandy. If you say so, I'll take a villa there instead of going back to Newport. Come and dine with me. We'll talk it over. Then next week, we'll run down to Treville, choose the villa.
Kiss me goodbye, Peter. I sail on Wednesday. You must go now. I shall be late for dinner.
Go. After that, kiss me again.
Don't be a goose, Peter. Do you suppose I'd have kissed you if you...
If what? What?
If we hadn't been saying goodbye.
Goodbye now? Look here, Undine, if you'll only stay, I'll make it all straight and square as you please. I'll get Bertha Shalom to stop over with you for the summer. I'll take a house at Treville and make my wife come out there. Only be a little good to me. Undine, why don't you answer? You know you can't go back to that deadly dry rot.
I can't go on with my present life either. It's hateful. If I don't go home, I've got to decide on something different.
You're not seriously thinking of marrying Shell.
I really can't discuss such things with you.
You mustn't throw yourself away a second time. I'll do anything you want. I swear I will.
Madame, a telegram for you.
Thank you.
Ralph, ill with pneumonia. Condition serious. Doctors advise your immediate return. Laura Fairford. Oh.
What's the matter?
Nothing.
Nothing, but you're as white as a sheet.
Am I? It's only a cable from home.
Ralph?
His sister.
What the devil is she cabling you about?
She says Ralph wants me.
Why didn't he tell you so himself? What business is it of Laura Fairford?
What indeed?
Is that all she says?
Yes, that's all.
Undine, listen. Won't you let me make it all right for you to stay?
The time has come when I must be sensible, Peter. That's why we must say goodbye.
You mean to tell me you're going back to Ralph?
I shall never go back to him.
Then you do mean to marry Shell.
I've got to look out for my future.
Ain't I here to look after your future?
Not in the way you mean. I'd rather never see you again.
Damn it. If that's the way you feel... I'll do anything you say, Undine. I'll do anything in God's world to keep you.
Hush now, Ralph. Lie still.
I must get up.
Hush, hush. Drink this.
Laura, what was the name of the first nurse?
The first?
The one that went away.
Oh, Miss Hicks, you mean?
How long is it since she went?
It must be 3 weeks.
Oh. Call Undine. Well, why don't you call her? I want to speak to her.
She's not here.
You mean she's out?
I mean she hasn't come back from France.
But it was before Miss Hicks left that you told me you'd sent for her. And you say Miss Hicks has been gone 3 weeks.
Soon as he could get up and about, Ralph Marvell, looking as near to a ghost as a mortal man ever done, staggered off to have a parley with Mr. Spragg.
Where's Undine?
Well, if the train's on time, I presume she's somewhere between Chicago and Omaha around about now.
You mean to say she's in the United States?
Hasn't Dakota been a state for a year or two now?
Dakota?
Divorce court.
Oh, God! Is she with another man?
My daughter is not that style. I understand Undine thinks there have been mistakes on both sides. She considers the tie was formed too hastily. I believe desertion is the usual plea in such cases.
You mean to tell me Undine's divorcing me?
I presume that's her plan.
What? For desertion?
You've always done all you could for my daughter. There wasn't any other plea she could think of. She presumed this would be the most agreeable to your family.
Oh, it was good of her to think of that. Does she imagine I won't fight it?
It ain't easy to change Undine once she's set on a thing.
Well, perhaps not. But if she really means to apply for a divorce, I can make it a little less easy for her to get.
That's so.
And by God, I will. I suppose she's gone with Van Dagen.
My daughter's gone alone, sir. I understand she is meeting a lady friend, Mabel Lipscomb.
Does she suppose Van Dagen will marry her?
Undine didn't mention her future plans to me. If she had, I should have declined to discuss them with her.
I shall fight it. You may tell her I shall fight it to the end.
Look, I'd have given anything. Anything short of my girl herself not to have this happen to you, Ralph Marvell.
Thank you, sir.
But it has happened, you know. Bear that in mind. Nothing you can do will change it. Time and again, I've found that a good thing to remember.
If you'd only had the sense to come straight to Mabel, Undine Spragg, there isn't a tip I couldn't have given you. Not one.
You really are engaged to James Rolliver?
Look at the ring. Isn't it enough to dazzle a girl?
Mabel, it didn't seem as if I should need any tips. Peter was hooked.
Uh-uh. I could have told you one thing right off, and that is to get your divorce first. You ought to have attended to that before you even began with Peter Van Degen. That's what I did before James ever clapped eyes on me.
He said he'd do anything to keep me.
But you came rushing over here to Dakota.
I want us to marry. I'm not an immoral woman.
Of course not, dearest. But if your divorce had been ready...
He's afraid of Claire. That's what it is. Afraid she'll never give him a divorce.
She'd rather he had you as his mistress. Thank goodness I was brought up in a place where there's some sense of decency left. Out at Apex, you'd have acted different. You never, never would have given way to your feelings before you got your divorce.
He seemed so unhappy.
Oh, I know. Has he stopped writing?
He never writes.
James writes me every day. Never let out of your sight a man who doesn't write.
I know. That's why I stayed with him the last few weeks.
But what made you so sure of him?
He was devoted. Clothes, jewels, the best hotels. He spent a fortune on these pearls, Mabel. Look. I am his ideal woman.
Well, where is he then? Where is he?
Poor Undine waited in Dakota till her cash gave out, then made her way to New York. There she discovered Mr. Peter Van Degen, swanning around the social circuit with his wife on his arm.
Get tickets for the opera, Father.
You want me to get you a box?
No, just two good seats in the stalls. I want you to go with me.
What you plan out, Undie?
Why don't you fetch little Polly over from Ralph's family for a visit, Undie? I ain't seen the boy in months.
Are you mad? They would take every opportunity to be hateful to me. They'd like nothing better. They're the ones who turned Ralph against me in the first place.
What's the game with the opera, Missy?
There's someone I need to see.
Where'd you get those pearls?
I...
Did your husband give them to you?
Ralph!
Who did them?
Why?
I guess you better send them back to the party they belong to.
They belong to me.
You better send them back to Peter Van Degen the first thing tomorrow morning. What are you doing, Laura?
You can see. Taking down these...
This
pictures.
Is my study. These are my pictures.
You want to look at her every day, Ralph? To have her staring down at you each time you look up? To be reminded of her...
She was my wife. And I don't want you forbidding Paul to speak of her either, as if his mother were dead.
What's the use of encouraging him to speak of her when he's never to see her? The sooner he forgets her, the better.
No. Later, if she asks to see him, I shan't refuse.
She never will.
You think I can pass a sponge over my memory? You think it can be removed as easily as you take down her pictures from the wall?
Ralph! Ralph, you're still tired and weak. You have to forget her. Just forget it all.
It's a divorce case. I shall have to defend myself in a court of law. How can I forget?
Oh, no, Ralph. It will break Mother's heart. Surely you won't contest it. Think of the scandal, the newspapers, the gossip. Oh, please, Ralph, for all our sakes, be dignified.
You want me to stand back and agree to all she says, that I want a divorce as much as her, that she should have custody.
She's never looked after Paul in her life, and she won't be starting now. Paul is safe with us. Please don't go to court. I beg you. For our family name, for the sake of Paul's name.
After all, what do I stand to gain if I oppose her?
Nothing! Believe me, you are better off ignoring it. Don't lower yourself to her level.
Indeed. What on earth does it matter? It was only my life, after all.
Peter!
Undine, how do you do?
How dare you? How... dare you pretend?
I'll thank you not to make a scene. My wife is here.
You promised me.
I changed my mind.
But why?
You want to know why? I got to thinking about that telegram, Paris. And they told you Ralph was desperately ill. The one you said was nothing.
How did you know?
When she had no reply from you, Laura cabled me and asked me where you were.
You didn't say anything.
At the time, no. Not when we were in the heat of it. But afterwards, I got to thinking, she act like that to me if I was dying?
I wouldn't.
And do you know, it took the gloss off the thing.
If you knew, you are as bad as me.
He wasn't my husband, dear girl. Now, I shan't speak to you again, and I don't think you'll find many in New York who will. So don't embarrass yourself.
My sakes, Undine. You look as if you'd been setting up all night with the remains.
Here, take these pearls.
Good land alive. Well, you got a fortune right round your neck whenever you wear them, Undine Sprague.
Mrs. Heaney, I want you to take them.
Take them? Where to?
Why?
To be restrung? You ought to have it done right here before your eyes with pearls that are worth what these are.
Do you suppose I could get anything for them?
Get anything? Well, what
anything
do you mean,
like their worth. I mean, they came from the biggest place in Paris.
I know quality when I seize it, Undie.
They're mine, after all. They're mine, and I could get away from here. I want you to try and sell them.
Oh, my.
I want you to try and sell them for me. I want you to do the best you can with them, Mrs. Heaney. I can't do it myself, but you must swear you never tell a soul.
Why, you poor child. It ain't the first time. Oh, it's a pity, too, there's such beauties. But you'll get others.
Undie, how about I send Mrs. Heaney to bring young Polly round? He ain't seen his grandma in such a long while.
I wouldn't ask them a favor for the world.
Well, you gonna hide yourself away here and not even go out no more?
I got a clipping about your friend Mabel Lipscomb here, Undie. Lipscomb, as was, she's Mrs. Jim Rolliver now. Now, they reckon she had the most brilliant wedding ever seen in Little Rock.
I know. I can't go out here, Mother. You don't understand.
But why?
You think I can live here like a leper? I want to get back to Paris where there are people who care for me.
The Marquis de Chelles?
Yes, he's a friend.
And admirer, I'll be bound. I've got a piece about his chateau here in my clippings.
Hello, Mother.
Father, why don't you and Mother come over to Paris with me? I can't go about on my own now I'm single, and I dare say you'd find it amusing.
I barely got enough cash to keep us here, miss. Never mind gallivanting across the ocean.
Not even Mother on her own?
Oh, Andy, I don't know as I should like to leave you.
Not even Mother. That's fine. You send back those pearls?
Mrs. Heaney's taken them.
I took them where I knew to get the best price. And 2 days later, I handed Undy a bundle of banknotes fat enough to bring a smile to that pretty, discontented little face. She was busy calculating her future. And soon as she could get a passage, she took herself off to Paris. But Paris, out of season's, a sadly empty place. And such few as was left of the smart set, well, they cut her. The Marquis de Chelles was out of town. The wrong sort of people noticed her, so she began to feign sick. Soon enough, she really did become nervous, sleeping badly, bored half to death. When she called a doctor, he advised her try in a small, quiet place on the Riviera, and with her maid and an omnibus of luggage, she set off. Well, that poor child. Blow me if the Riviera place wasn't truly small and quiet, full of invalids playing patience and going to bed at 9 o'clock. Undie tried on her finest clothes and paraded through them. She took to her bed and sent down orders for fancy titbits, which her maid took back untouched, along with complaints for the chef. She brooded and she brooded, and she come to the conclusion that Peter Van Degen never had the least intention of marrying her, and that she had been took for a fool. She sunk herself in a dull fog of rancor. Then one day on the hotel terrace, a small untidy woman come by, pushing the wheelchair of an ancient black-bonneted lady.
Oh, good afternoon. Isn't it Mrs. Marvel?
I'm sorry. Who did you...
I think you know my cousin, Raymond de Chelles. I'm the Princess Estradina. I've come here with my mother for the air.
Ah, good afternoon. Good afternoon, madame.
Enchantée, madame.
Maman, je te laisse ici.
Her luck come up again at last. This lady's mother were the Duchess of Dordogne, and Undie saw herself being restored to her rightful place in the social order.
Isn't it hideously dull here? If you're staying too, do take pity on us. We might go on some trips together. And in the evenings we could make a bridge.
That would be delightful.
I swear, if I didn't have my little girls here to amuse me, I would be ready to slit my wrists.
Is your husband also...
My chérie, I'm separated. Unofficially, of course. Our situations are not so very different, I think. Though, bien sûr, the American way is divorce. I think we both have adventures to relate.
I'm afraid I don't.
Oh, you funny Americans. Why do you all behave as if love were a secret infirmity? Isabelle, chérie, va chercher ton chapeau. C'est dans ma chambre.
She's your...
youngest. Je les aime toutes les deux, mais Isabelle, j'adore. Which is a little on account of my special amour for the man who was her papa. Her unofficial papa. Oh. You are easily scandalisé. Quand même, the children are the most important. You have children?
A boy. He's in New York.
So far away! Mais c'est terrible!
His life is more settled there.
But whatever one's errors, one's child belongs to one. Eh bien, I must take maman indoors, but she has a visitor coming tomorrow. Shall you and I make an outing to Nice? We could lunch at the Royal and look in the shops. We may meet somebody amusing. Anyhow, it's better than staying here.
The blue is pretty, princess.
Oh, for goodness sake, call me Lily. They all do.
But look, it doesn't sit properly on my hair.
Then try the black with the osprey feather.
That would suit you better, Lily, with your dark eyes. Here, try it on.
Très chic. But, my chère Undine, I am not buying today. If the blue is not right, I am sure the milliner will alter it for such a good-looking customer. Écoute, chérie, I have just remembered I must desert you.
But aren't we having lunch?
Alas, I promised Maman I'd look up an old friend of hers, and I must go now before she takes her siesta. Forgive me, chérie, I will only be 1 hour, 2 maximum. Shall we meet at the Palace Tea Rooms at 4?
Undine saw through her game right enough. She knew that princess had invited her along to make a screen for some secret assignation. Undie sat in the tea rooms with her color high, and made up her mind that she would show Lily exactly what she felt about being used in such a fashion. She even toyed with the idea of taking the first train back. But she had been that lonesome, she were loath to lose the acquaintanceship. And it turned out lucky she stayed put, 'cause when Lily came hurrying through the crowd, she had a tall, dark man in tow.
Undine, chérie, I couldn't get a cab, but will you forgive me? See, I have brought an admirer of yours to make amends. Mon cousin Raymond.
Madame Marvel, I am truly delighted to see.
Marquis de Chelles, what a lovely surprise.
Garçon, du thé.
I heard you were in Paris, but when I went up to town, you'd vanished. Now I'm holidaying with friends in Beaulieu, and to run into Lily in Nice, of all places, and find out you were hidden away in the countryside with my aunt.
It is destiny.
I must come and pay respects to my aunt. I can visit you.
Oh, don't come to us. It is too dull. Let us come over occasionally and call on you. We are dying for a pretext, aren't we, Undine?
You are, perhaps, dear Lily. But I must remember my delicate health, which was the reason the doctor sent me here. Nice is very tiring. I think it would be delightful to see you in the company of your Aunt Marquis when you come to visit her. And of course it would be altogether more proper.
Claire, I'm so glad Laura persuaded you to bring the children down to the country this weekend.
Well, how else am I ever to see you and Paul?
I'm working in the city, less than a mile from you all week.
Yes, but you won't come to my house. Of course, because of...
Peter...
Let's not speak of my husband, Ralph.
Oh, why not? You know I have a pearl-handled pistol in my drawer at home. Sometimes I dream of shooting him. It would give satisfaction all round.
Please don't.
Only joking, my dear.
It's good to see Paul with roses in his cheeks again. And they all play so well together.
Yes. But I miss the little fellow during the week, you know. I depend on him for my daily dose of laughter.
He's been your ballast through all this stormy weather.
He is the main object in my life. He and my book.
Oh, Ralph. You're writing again?
I am. At last. At last. What I want is to write something in which men will look no bigger than the insects they are. And somehow, at last, I have managed to reduce one of my old subjects to the right dimensions. And so, I've made a dash at an opening chapter.
I'm so pleased.
And the extraordinary thing is that instead of collapsing in a tired heap after a day in the office and entertaining Polly, suddenly my head is full of visions and I want nothing more of an evening than to be left alone with my sheets of paper.
You have your life back, Ralph.
Well, I wouldn't go as far as that, but I have my boy and my book and my kind cousin Claire.
I like your cousin Shell very much, Lily. He's delightful, and I hope I shall see him in Paris. But I know how easy it is for a woman in my position to get talked about, and I have my little boy to consider.
I fancy you liked him, but he has visited my mother 6 times on your account.
I am not going to see him on his own.
Chérie, you can turn him down.
I wish to remarry.
But my dear, you don't understand La France. In the first place, between people in society, a religious marriage is necessary. And since the church doesn't recognize divorce, that's obviously hors de la question. If a man of position goes through a civil marriage with a divorced woman, he's simply ruining himself and her. They'd be better off as good friends. Such arrangements are understood.
I'm a respectable woman.
But when a Frenchman marries, he wants to marry as his people always have. He knows there are traditions he can't fight against.
I suppose money wouldn't make any difference.
None whatever. But, chérie, a woman with tact who is not in a position to remarry will find society extremely indulgent. Provided she keeps up appearances.
I am not interested in that type of arrangement.
There are no others you can have.
Undie moved herself back to Paris, and Raymond de Chelles continued to pay most particular attention to her, wooing her with compliments and flowers and passionate words enough to thrill a girl's heart. But he never did mention marriage. Then, one afternoon, Undine found time to open the latest letter from her mother.
Dear Undie, I was taking a walk through Washington Square in the hopes of seeing you-know-who, and as luck would have it, he was coming out of the house with his nurse. So I calls out, "Hello, Polly," and the clever little chap, even though he hasn't clapped eyes on me since Christmas, sings out, "Hello, Grandma," sweet as a bird. Then the very next day comes a note from Mrs. Fairford saying Ralph would be glad to send Paul for a visit. So Mrs. Heaney went over for the boy. Oh, my, Undie, you should see how he has growed, fine and straight as a young oak, with Ralph's dark eyes and your lovely hair. And he picked up every blessed object in the room. When he comes to the photo of you, he says, "Who's the pretty lady?" So I tell him it's his mama, and he says to me, "Grandma, is she a very long way off? When do you think she will come back?" Well, now, Undie, it near broke my heart to hear him go on like that.
Madame, the Marquis de Chelles is here.
Tell him I'll meet him downstairs in the hotel lounge.
You know you have driven me completely to distraction, Undine. Look at me. A grown man. I don't eat, I don't sleep. The vision of your loveliness haunts me day and night.
Do you say this to every beautiful woman you meet, Raymond?
Perhaps. But in this instance, for the first time, it is true. Undine... Have you been crying?
No.
What's the matter, my dear? You can tell me.
It's my son, my little boy, Paul.
Is he unwell?
No, but he lives in New York with his father's family, and my mother has just written to me about him.
You miss him?
A child's place is with his mother. But how can I? A single woman alone in the world with no roof of her own over her head. How can I bring him here?
No, don't. Don't. This beautiful face was not made for tears. Listen, I have my motor outside. Let me take you down to the chateau for the weekend and we will concoct a plan to reunite you with your child.
There is only one plan that would make it possible for me to be with him again.
And what's that?
Marriage. To a good man who would be a father to him.
You know I am a Roman Catholic. Marriage to a divorced woman is out of the question.
And so is my visiting your chateau for the weekend, my dear.
At the very least, come for a drive with me. Out into the country where one can breathe the air.
Raymond, no! If I'm seen driving out of Paris with you, I might as well be doing what everyone will imagine we are doing.
So beautiful and so cross. How is it possible?
Let me go now. I have a headache. I shall go and sit at my window and look down on the happy passers-by who are free to be with those they love.
I love you, Undine. Allow me to...
To
be with you.
How?
If you are so... There is only one avenue open to us. The annulment of your previous marriage.
The annulment?
It is not possible to remarry in my faith. Therefore, we must ask the Pope to decree that your first marriage was invalid.
But how?
I don't know. It would surely cost a fortune. At the very least, come out to dinner with me, dearest Undine, and give me the solace of your company for a few hours.
I can't.
But why?
I wasn't going to tell you, but I'm too upset to invent a lie. I had a visit from the Princess Estradina, who was charged by her mother, your aunt, to request me not to call on her anymore.
Not to call?
Your relatives are upset by me. Your cousin tells me your mother is upset by me.
It is no business of Lily's or my mother's, whom
she thinks... The Princess Estradina tells me they all think... I will spoil your other chances of marriage.
My private life is nothing to do with any of those interfering old women.
Raymond, it is clearly impossible for me to continue to be seen with you or to receive your visits.
Leave me to decide that.
Respecting and loving you, as I do, the last thing on earth I should ever wish is to be the cause of disagreement between you and your family.
Undine Marvell. Sorry, Sprague. Large as life and twice as lovely.
You sightseeing.
I am. Care to walk along with me?
Do you like Paris?
It beats everything. I suppose you've been to that old church over there.
Notre Dame? Of course. Have you never been to Paris before?
Nope, this is my first look around. I came across in March.
Wasn't that a bad time to leave Wall Street?
Well, so-so. Fact is, I needed a change. I presume you're settled here now. I saw by the papers...
Yes. It was all a mistake from the first.
Well, I never thought Ralph was your form.
Why don't you come back and have tea with me?
I guess this lays out West End Avenue.
Of course, there are times when I'm very lonely.
I'd say it's only when you want to be.
I don't suppose you've known what it is to be lonely since you've been in Europe.
I don't always go around with a guide.
Then perhaps I shall see something of you.
There's nothing would suit me better, but the fact is I'm probably sailing next week.
Are you? I'm sorry.
Do you want my blessing again?
Yes, I do.
Well, I'll be damned.
You've... always been so awfully nice. No, I'm serious. And I finally met the man I want to marry. Really, really this time. You've heard of...
But the Marquis de Chelles? I read the papers, Undie.
Then you know he's Roman Catholic and would only be able to marry me if my marriage to Ralph was annulled.
And you think if you had the cash, you could fix it up all right with the Pope?
You guessed.
Well, I wish I could send the old gentleman my check tomorrow morning, but the fact is I'm high and dry. If I wasn't, I don't know, but... That's an awfully fetching way you do your hair.
What I want is your advice.
Is this your son in the picture here? He's grown into a fine fellow. You got him with you?
No.
No?
I can't tell you how I miss him.
Why don't you get him back then?
What?
Who does he belong to, anyhow?
Belong to?
Who got him when you were divorced, did you?
Oh, I got everything.
So I thought. Well, I know what I'd do if he was mine.
If he was yours.
And you tried to get him away from me, fight you to a finish. If it cost me down to my last dollar, I would.
It wouldn't cost you anything like that. I haven't got a dollar to fight back with.
Well, you ain't got to fight. Your decree gave him to you, didn't it? Why don't you send right over and get him? That's what I'd do if I was you.
But I can't afford to have him here.
You couldn't up to now, but now you're going to get married. You're going to be able to give him a home and a father's care and the foreign languages. That's what I'd say if I was you. Ralph takes considerable stock in him, don't he?
We're both awfully fond of him, of course. His father'd never give him up.
Just so. You got the Marvells running. All you got to do is sit tight and wait for their check.
You really couldn't lend me the money. Managed to borrow it for me, I mean.
If I could manage to borrow any money at this particular minute, well, I'd have to lend every dollar of it to Elmer Moffat Esquire. I'm stone broke, if you want to know. And wanted for an investigation, too. That's why I'm over here, improving my mind.
I thought you said you were going home next week.
I am. Because I found out there's a party wants me to stay away, worse than the courts want me back. Making the trip just for my private satisfaction. There won't be a penny in it, I'm afraid.
Don't you ever mean to get married?
I shouldn't wonder if I don't. One of these days. Millionaires always collect something, but I gotta collect my millions first.
I see.
Well, so long, Mrs. Marvell. It's been uncommonly pleasant to see you. You better think over what I said.
You've never had a child.
Look, Claire, look here. Halfway down the page.
New York beauty to wed French nobleman. Oh, Mrs. Undine Marvell, confident Pope will annul previous marriage. Mrs. Marvell talks about her case. Oh, there's a whole column of it.
Every detail the gossips could desire.
But how in the world can she have her marriage annulled?
With a great deal of money, I suppose she might.
Oh, well, she won't get that from the Marquis de Chelles. He's far from rich. I know that from, well, from Peter.
Well, maybe she has another source.
Well, then you'll be free.
Free? I'm free now, as far as that goes.
Oh, but it will go so much further when she has another name. When she's a different person altogether. Then you'll really have Paul to yourself.
There's never been the least doubt about my having Paul. Laura, what are you doing? You're drenched.
I wanted to catch you before you get to the house.
Why? What's happened?
Nothing. Only come under the shelter of this tree. I didn't want to upset Mother, but there's been a crazy message about Paul.
Paul? An accident?
No, he's fine. It was that Mrs. Heaney woman. She telephoned about fetching him on a steamer on Saturday. She said he's to have all his things packed. I couldn't make head.
I see.
Is it a misunderstanding? Have you heard from the Spraggs?
No, I've got no idea what she's talking about. Come on, don't look so terrified, Laura. This is nonsense. Let's get back to the
house. Ralph, there's a letter for you, too. A lawyer's letter. It came this morning. I took it so Mother wouldn't see.
My client's circumstances now, happily permitting, at last in a position to offer her son a home. Long separation. A mother's feelings. Every social and educational advantage. The courts having awarded her the sole custody.
What does it mean? Ralph?
We just sat down to dinner, Ralph. Do you want to come and join us?
Mr. Sprague, what's this about Paul? My sister's had a message we can't make out.
Didn't you get a letter?
From Undine's lawyers. Yes, here, read it. She hasn't hitherto been very keen to have Paul with her.
My daughter has intimated that she wishes these gentlemen to act for her. I haven't received any additional instructions from her.
But Mrs. Sprague told Mrs. Heaney
to... The ladies are apt to be a trifle hasty. I believe Mrs. Sprague had a letter yesterday instructing her to select a reliable escort for Paul. I suppose she thought
that... You don't for a moment imagine, do you, that I'm going to deliver up my son like a bale of goods in answer to any instructions in God's world?
Well, I don't...
Oh, yes, I know. I didn't seek custody. I abandoned my right to him. But I didn't know what I was doing. I was sick with grief and misery. My people were broken up over the whole business, and I wanted to spare them. I wanted, above all, to spare my boy when he grew up.
Spare him.
If I'd contested the case, you know what the result would have been. Your daughter's name would have been dragged through the mud. I let it go by default. I made no conditions. All I wanted was to keep Paul and never to let him hear a word against his mother.
I presume at the time it was optional with you to demand Paul's custody.
Oh, yes, it was optional.
I'm sorry you didn't do it.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it to save us all from the scandal. I should have contested everything. I should have fought. I must see my lawyer.
Look here, Ralph. The best I can offer now is that we won't try to take the boy from you till the lawyers have thrashed things out. But once my daughter remarries, she will have him, you know.
I thought Mrs. Sprague would know there's no earthly use trying to take Paul from me.
I presume his grandma thinks he'll belong to her more if we keep him in the family.
But how can Undine imagine I'll ever give him up?
I guess she's got the law on her side.
And the lawyer told me that the only way we can get the case reopened is to bring evidence of the irregularity of the mother's life. And even then, I would probably only be able to see Paul at stated intervals. But I'm going to fight this time, Claire, to the bitter end. I'm not going to take the old Dagenet line of least resistance and sparing everybody ever again.
Ralph, you say it will cost a good deal. But why take it to the courts at all? Why not give the money to Undine instead of to your lawyers?
What?
Why do you suppose she suddenly made up her mind she must have Paul?
She wants him because he'll give her the appearance of respectability. Having him with her will prove that all the rights are on her side and the wrongs are on mine.
That's the obvious answer. But shall I tell you what I think, my dear? I don't believe Undine cares a straw for the appearance of respectability. What she wants is money for her annulment.
No.
Don't you see? It's her last chance. She's much too clever to burden herself with the child merely to annoy you. What she wants is to make you buy him back from her. Perhaps I can be of use to you at last.
You, as if you weren't always, letting me load you with all my bothers.
Oh, if only I've hit on the way out of this one, then there won't be any bothers left.
If it's that, if it's money, then I shall soon know.
And you will let me help.
Claire.
It will take a lot of money. All these lawsuits do. Besides, she'd be ashamed to sell him cheap. And I've got a lot saved up. Money of my own, I mean.
Your own?
My very own. I've been hoarding up my scrap of an income for years, thinking that, well, someday I'd find I couldn't stick it with Peter any longer.
But don't you still need...
I know I shall never budge now. There are the children. And besides, He has been more considerate to me since...
Since Undine?
Yes. You will let me help.
Claire had hit bullseye on Undine's thinking. The lawyers put it like this. Undine Sprague might, in return for a substantial consideration, be prevailed on to admit that it was for her son's advantage to remain with his father. So Ralph set about raising cash any way he could, which took him to call on his wife's old acquaintance, Alma Moffat, who'd come out of that investigation smelling pretty sweet.
Well, it's a first-rate time to buy, there's no doubt of that. But you say you want to make a quick turnover. Heard of a soft thing that won't wait, I presume? That's apt to be the way with soft things. There's always other fellows after them. Well, I'd go considerably out of my way to do you a good turn because you did me one when I needed it mighty bad.
Well, thank you, Mr. Moffat.
You say you got to have your funds within 3 weeks. That's quick work. And you want 100,000. Can you put up 50?
Yes, I think so.
Well, I guess I can double it for you. Let me tell you my plan. I don't want to let you in for anything you ain't quite sure about.
Well, if you're sure.
You really can trust Moffat, Ralph.
He seems certain. It's a safe thing. I understand he's in with Jim Rolliver now, and Rolliver controls Apex. This is some kind of a scheme to buy up all the works of public utility in the town. They're practically sure of their charter, and Moffat tells me I can count on doubling my investment within a few weeks. Of course, I'll go into the details if you like.
No, you've made it all so clear to me. Besides, what on earth does it matter? The great thing is that it's done. Now, how much were you thinking?
Well, my grandfather's giving me $25,000, which will ultimately be deducted from my share of his estate. And my mother and Laura's husband are both chipping in.
And I'm the only one left out?
Well, you see, I shall need as much as 50.
But then you've got to let me help. Oh, I'm so glad. I have 20,000 waiting.
Well, you're a darling, but I couldn't take it.
I've told you it's mine. Every penny of it.
Yes, but supposing things went wrong?
Well, nothing can if you'll only take it.
I may lose it.
I shan't, if I've given it to you. Oh, can't you imagine all it will make up for? The idiotic choices I've made?
I accept. It is queer, though. It's happening in this room. Under the eyes of Peter's portrait.
Shh, don't.
I won't.
Ralph Marvell, good morning.
Well, I don't like to bother you, Elmer, but it's been 2 weeks now, and I was wondering if there's any news.
Well, yes, everything's going along first rate. They thought they'd hung us up to dry last week, but they haven't. There may be another week's delay, Ralph. I'd say we ought to be opening a bottle of wine on it by the 4th.
Oh, so there's nothing to worry about?
Of course not. I'll keep you posted, Ralph.
Paul was so lost in his reading, he didn't even notice me walk past.
There's barely light enough to read by now. You see how the sky's turning from blue almost to green as the sun sinks? That sunset over the lake.
He's going to be exactly like you, Ralph. For his own sake, I wish there were just a drop or two of Sprague in him.
Oh, the plodding citizen I've become will keep him from taking after the lyric idiot who begot him. Paul and I, between us, are going to turn out first rate.
Well, I believe that. And your book?
Oh, flourishing. Growing and filling me with more ideas than I can write at once. You know, Claire, I have never felt such a surge of energy.
I'm so glad to see you happy at last, Ralph.
Oh, don't dare to use that word until it's certain.
When do you expect to hear from Moffat?
Any day. In fact, I'll call on him tomorrow.
And tomorrow, in the concluding episode, Undine's plans to secure a better future for herself move apace, but will she ever find real happiness? In The Custom of the Country, you heard Lorelei King, Tom Hollander, Rebecca Knight, Barbara Barnes, Jonathan Keeble, Dan Stevens, Lucy Gaskell, William Houston, Tessa Nicholson, Provence Maidieu, and Joseph Kloska. The Custom of the Country was dramatised by Jane Rogers, and the director was Nadia Molinari. Bumping into your ex is commonly cited as the stuff of nightmares, but doing so while on honeymoon with your new partner is positively disastrous. BBC Radio 4 Extra is lighting the touch paper and reigniting old passions in Noel Coward's sublime comedy Private Lives, boasting a stellar cast of Helena Bonham Carter and Bill Nye as the old flames Amanda and Elliot, and Andrea Risborough as his new partner Sybil. After discovering Amanda is honeymooning at the same hotel, Elliot is desperate to leave before his wife finds out.
But darling, please be reasonable. We only just arrived, everything's unpacked, it's our first night together, we can't go away now.
We can have our first night together in Paris.
We shouldn't get there until the small hours.
Now, please, Sybil, I know it sounds crazy to you and utterly lacking in reason and sense, but I've got second sight over certain things. I'm almost psychic. I've got the most extraordinary sensation of impending disaster. If we stay here, something appalling will happen, I know it.
Private Lives on BBC Radio 4 Extra on Saturday afternoon at 4.
The BBC Radio New Comedy Award is back.
I do have two kids, their names are ridiculous. And Keith!
And now, it's bigger than ever.
This is the first heat broadcast on BBC Radio 4 Extra!
Follow the search from the start as BBC Radio 4 Extra brings you the highlights and results from all eight national heats.
Americans spend more each year on coffee than on educating their children. How do they sleep at night?
The 2013 BBC Radio New Comedy Award begins here on BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Well done.
In Friday night's Comedy Club at 10:30.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been lovely. I've been an absolute legend.
Mel's here next, and I'll see you at 5 with comedy, including Richard Griffiths.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Hello, it's Mel Gedroych here, and you're just in time for a tasty treat from the 4 o'clock show Ice Cream Van. What do you fancy? Listen, I've got cones, tubs, wafers, and a rather mouldy choc ice from 1984. Sorry, I've retrieved it from the back of the fridge. There you go. Now, there is nothing quite like an ice cream van to get the heart racing. Just ask comedian Johnny Vegas.
It just takes you back to an instant point in your past, and ideally your childhood. And for most of us, fortunately, that's the time of carefree youth, isn't it?
Coming up this afternoon, we'll raise a 99 and celebrate the jingle jangle of the ice cream van chimes. When I hear the ice cream jingle jangle down our street, I'm afraid I say to my daughters, yep, that's the ice cream van, and the music means they've sold out of ice cream. It's a good technique, you try it at home. Anyway, who's for an ice cream? Come on, I'm feeling generous. Let me get you a couple of scoops. Yeah, would you like some toppings with that? Yeah? The blue sauce? The red sauce? Hundreds of thousands? Yeah? Dollop of marmalade?
I'm going to taste it, and I make sure I get a piece of peel. Lovely, sharp Seville orange marmalade.
Yes, we'll also look at the appeal of Paddington's favourite sandwich spread a little later. And coming up at the end of the show, we've got the first part of a brand new story, The Boy Who Sprouted Antlers by John Yeoman.
Billy walked on by himself, thinking things over. He was going to look pretty silly in a few weeks' time if he still hadn't managed to grow any horns. He knew that if he failed, Melanie wouldn't let him hear the last of it. There's nothing for it. I shall just have to grow horns.
First, it's time to pack the old haversack and an extra pair of socks as we're off on another magical mystery tour. As ever, we're setting off on another mazy journey to an undisclosed destination. I will play Mrs. Satnav, and I'll try to guide you to our final destination through a variety of subtle clues and gentle encouragement. I'll begin by saying that we're heading north to a land of wolves and moose, a land of limited light in winter and the homeland of legendary seafaring warriors. So, does that set you in the right direction? Don't worry if you're all at sea, I'll throw you a few more lifelines throughout the show. Today we begin a new story called The Boy Who Sprouted Antlers, where we're introduced to a young boy with a big imagination called Billy Dexter.
There must be heaps of things you can't do, no matter how hard you try, agreed Paul. What, for instance? Demanded Billy, who liked the idea of his being able to do anything. Like climb Everest or break the airspeed record, replied Paul as they went into Freeman's to buy their iced lollies. They bought their iced lollies, lemon flavour, and came out into the sunshine again. But people have climbed Everest and people do break the airspeed record, argued Billy. And that proves that it can be done.
I love a nice lolly on a sunny day, don't you? My favourite of all time, I don't think they make them anymore, was the Lolly Gobble Chock Bomb. It had a very, very annoying jingle that went with it, which was, and the lolly gobble chock bomb, and I can't remember the words. It's covered in ice cream, some of that. I really can't remember the words, but it did include the words lolly gobble chock bomb. Good. I have to say, there is nothing quite like the thrill of an ice cream van, and for many people, the sound of their chimes is enough to get them salivating. But when did ice cream vans start using chimes, and why do they have such an effect on us? Here, Jim Carrey, no, sorry, it's not the famous Hollywood actor, but a super skilled sound designer, goes looking for answers, but not before conducting a little social experiment. He changed his ringtone to that of an ice cream van chime.
Whenever I was on a train and my phone rang, rush hour wearied adults would start smiling. I actually stopped answering calls just so I could watch the corners of newspapers curl down as the corners of mouths curled up and humid eyes looked.